Afternoon. It is a pleasure to be here, and we're really excited to be here. So thank you for choosing to attend Perpetual's session, Why Long Short is a New Long. Vasant Kulnani is the presenter today, and Vasant's a Senior Portfolio Manager at Perpetual Investments. He has an MBA, a Masters of Science in Aerospace Engineering. So I'm sure you'll all agree, interesting qualifications for a portfolio manager. He's even had a stint at NASA. He's responsible for overseeing the portfolio management and analyst staff directly concerned with quantitative investments. And he's responsible for the shorting strategies with Perpetual Share Plus Fund, a long short strategy exclusive to the retail market. Vasant has been at Perpetual for over 14 years, and he's worked in various positions across equities and tactical asset allocation. He has over 31 years industry experience, and he's worked through many cycles. And you can see he still looks like a spring chicken. Prior to joining Perpetual, he held the position at Gulf International Bank, Bankers Trust, ANZ and Citibank. You will find his presentation very interesting and thought-provoking, and I think you'll agree with me that Vasant is eminently qualified to present his presentation, Why Long Short is the New Long.
I don't need that, I got that.
Thanks, Paul, for those very kind and very generous words, and good afternoon. I will begin with, let's begin with the graph of the Dow Jones Industrial Average from the year 1982 to now. As you can see, apart from a few small hiccups and some big ones, the market basically has been an uptrend since it bottomed at 784 on 2nd of August 1982. This raises the obvious question, is this a normal market? Is this the market that's likely to continue like this in the future? Or is this something that's always happened in the past? Market's always done what it's doing now. Obviously, I can't look into the future, but I can certainly share with you what has happened in the past. This next slide shows the graph of the Dow Jones Index from the year 1946 to 1966, a period of 20 years following the end of World War II. Again, as you can see, apart from a few small hiccups and some big ones, the market was in a sustained uptrend for 20 years. If you care to examine the drivers of these two bull markets, you will find a few similarities. The post-World War II bull market was driven by rebuilding of Europe, industrialization of Japan, massive infrastructure built in the US, such as the interstate highway system. Interstate highway system was built entirely in that period. The present bull market was driven by the collapse of the oil prices in the 80s, globalization and free trade, and the industrialization of China and India. So was this a normal market? Let's see what happened to this market in the years subsequent to 1966. As you can see, it essentially went sideways. For 16 long years, the market rotated between 700 and 1,000 points. This chart actually surprises a lot of people because they had no idea that the Dow Jones went sideways for 16 years. Now, this is not entirely surprising in an industry that has a lot of young people in it, and where it is said that if you remember the crash of 1987, you're too old. I remember the crash of 1987. Now, I don't know if the experience of 1966-1982 will be repeated, but it seems to me that it wouldn't be a bad idea if we brace ourselves for lower returns in the equity markets going forward. It wouldn't hurt. So what does a lower return environment mean for an investor? What can he or she do to prepare for this possibility? My proposition today is that in this lower return environment, investors will need to pay more attention to how their portfolios are run. They will need to run their portfolios more efficiently. so that they can either, number one, extract higher returns for the same level of risk, or two, reduce their market risk and still aim for the similar levels of return. Before we can address the issue of running portfolios more efficiently, we need to define what we mean by portfolio efficiency. And then we can look at ways of improving it. The concept of portfolio efficiency was first introduced by Clark, Silva, and Tholey in October 2002 in their seminal paper titled Portfolio Constraints and the Fundamental Law of Active Management. This work was actually an extension of some excellent work done earlier by Grinnell and Kahn in the year 2000. The actual term used by Clark, Silva, and Tholey was the transfer coefficient, or TC, which is now referred to as portfolio efficiency. Here I have shown the expanded version of the equation. I know this looks complicated, but I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about each term in the equation because this is quite relevant to what I have to say later on. The left-hand side of the equation is the alpha or the excess returns that an investor is after. The first term on the right-hand side is referred to as tracking error or TE. Tracking error refers to the extent to which the investor's portfolio is different to the benchmark portfolio. Tracking error for index manager would be close to zero, as his or her portfolio would look more or less like the index itself. The tracking error for an active manager, on the other hand, would be higher. For example, an active manager may choose not to hold any property stocks, or he or she may choose to be overweight resources stocks. Tracking error is the risk in the portfolio, i.e., the risk of underperforming the benchmark. The second term on the right-hand side is the IC. This is known as the Portfolio Manager's Information Coefficient. This refers to manager's skill, and it's a measure of his or her ability to forecast stock returns. If the stocks that manager expected to go up did indeed go up, and the stocks that the manager expected to go down did go down, then the managers would have a high IC, or information coefficient. The third term on the right-hand side is the TC. It's known as the transfer coefficient, or the portfolio efficiency. And today's my discussion is mostly about this term. TC, or the transfer coefficient, is a measure of the extent to which a portfolio manager is able to transfer his or her stock insights into the portfolio. So what do I mean by this? Let's say a portfolio manager is bullish on energy stocks, but he or she may have a mandate that dictates that he or she cannot be overweight the energy sector by more than 2%. In this situation, the manager, even though he or she may be right, is not able to implement the insights into the portfolio entirely. So in the absence of any portfolio constraints, the transfer coefficient of a portfolio should always be 1 or 100%. As you start introducing constraints in the portfolio, you reduce the efficiency of the portfolio. The final term on the right-hand side is the square root of n to the power half. N refers to the market breadth and is a measure of independent number of bets in the portfolio. For example, if your portfolio had 20 stocks and all those 20 stocks were picked because they were low PE stocks, then N for your portfolio would be 1, because you only have one bet in the portfolio, which is the low PE. So let's take another look at the equation put forward by Clark, Silva, and Tholey. Now, this equation provides an excellent theoretical framework for an investor to think about how they should have their portfolios managed. If an investor wants to increase his or her alpha, i.e. the left-hand side of the equation, then They can do so by increasing any of the terms on the right-hand side. If you increase the right-hand side, left-hand side goes up as well. So if investors want a higher alpha or larger alpha, then they can, number one, take on more risk, increase your tracking error. Look for manager with better skills, better IC. Or you can improve the efficiency of your portfolio, which is the transfer coefficient. Or you can diversify the number of bets in your portfolio without diluting the risk. So any of the terms on the right-hand side, you increase the terms on the right-hand side, the left-hand side goes up automatically. Of all these four options that investor can use to increase their alpha, I will argue that it's probably easiest to increase the portfolio efficiency. And like I said, in the absence of any portfolio constraint, the TC of a portfolio should be 1 or 100%. If there are no constraints, then there is no reason why the insight should not be entirely reflected in the portfolio. As soon as you start introducing portfolio constraints, you start hurting the portfolio efficiency. More constraints you put on the portfolio, more you will damage the portfolio. To see what impact various portfolio constraints have on portfolio efficiency, we turn to a paper by Clark Silva and Sapra. This was published in 2004, titled Toward More Information Efficient Portfolios. For the purpose of their study, they constructed various optimized portfolios with the typical constraints that are imposed on a portfolio manager. Then they relaxed these constraints one by one to see what the impact was. Their results are shown here. As you can see, the transfer coefficient with all the typical portfolio constraints is 0.332. Only 33% of portfolio managers' insights are being transferred into the portfolio. If you remove the industry constraints, your transfer coefficient or portfolio efficiency improves by 8%. Similar thing for sector, 8%. Position limit, actually, it comes down. And that is because the position limit in the constraint portfolio were quite generous to start with. Market cap, if you remove the market cap constraint, your portfolio efficiency goes up by 46%. And look at the final term. If you remove the long-only constraint, portfolio efficiency goes up by 108%. Now, remember what I said, if you increase the right-hand side by 108%, any of the terms on the right-hand side by 108%, you increase the left-hand side by 108%. As you can see, the long-only constraint is the most inefficient of all the typical constraints imposed on the portfolio. Relaxing it can give you an immediate boost to your alpha for the same level of risk. To see what these numbers would look like in an Australian context, we took 2 months. We picked one up month and one down month to make sure the outcome was independent of the market direction. We then constructed a long-only portfolio with typical constraints that we use at Perpetual, and then we gradually relaxed the long-only constraint to see what the impact they had on TC or portfolio efficiency. And the results are here. As you can see, the improvement in portfolio efficiency are not as dramatic as in the Clark Silva Sapra study. And there are reasons for it. One is that the alphas that we use were highly controlled. We actually used the actual returns from the month as alphas. And number two, the long-only constraints in our long-only portfolio were not as restrictive, to begin with as they were in their study. For example, we did not impose market cap or industry neutrality, but allowed some variation. Nevertheless, the improvement in TC or portfolio efficiency is significant. Remember, a 10% improvement in portfolio efficiency results directly into 10% improvement in alpha. The two things that stand out from this table are as follows. Even a small relaxing of the long-only constraint by 5%, your efficiency goes up quite significantly. But then it tapers off. The next 4% relaxation of the long-only constraints is only 3%. So the first 5% gives you almost 14% boost in efficiency, and the next 5% gives you only 3% boost in efficiency. And these are some of the details of the portfolio construction, the tracking error, the benchmark, number of stocks, etc. Transactions costs were ignored. Now next, I want to discuss the actual implementation of a long-short strategy in some detail. But before I do that, I need to briefly talk about the concept of implied alpha. Alpha, as we know, is the manager's expected excess return of a stock. Implied alpha is the alpha of a stock that is implied or deduced from the portfolio. For example, if you saw a portfolio that was 2% overweight NAB, and you didn't know who the portfolio manager was, you didn't need to know who the portfolio manager was, you could reasonably assume that portfolio manager of that portfolio was bullish on NAB, because he was expecting it to outperform, so his alpha for NAB was positive. And then, if you saw another portfolio that was 4% overweight NAB, not 2%, but 4% overweight NAB, you could reasonably assume that this manager was even more bullish on NAB than the first one, and his alpha for NAB would be even higher than the first one. Similarly, being underweight BHP would imply that the manager's alpha for BHP is negative. So very quickly, I want to introduce the concept of implied alpha. It's got a very precise mathematical definition, and it can be calculated quite precisely. So I just want to introduce that concept because I need to use that in my implementation. In October 2002, we undertook a study to see if an existing long-only portfolio with long-term history and track record would benefit from a superimposed long-short strategy. I use the term superimposed to emphasize the fact that in this long-short strategy, the investment process for the long side of the portfolio was entirely untouched. Short positions were created using only the implied alphas of the long portfolio. This study was interesting in two ways. First, it was done almost 6 years ago when long-short strategies were not so common. And second, it was not like the typical long-short strategy that are built as new investment processes from scratch. It was the first time, to my knowledge, or the only time, that a superimposed short strategy was explored to create a long-short strategy. The rationale for the study was as follows. If relaxing the long-only constraint can boost the portfolio efficiency, then it should do so regardless of how the short positions are implemented, as long as the alphas for the entire long-short portfolio were consistent, which they were forced to be through the use of implied alpha. This method of implementing long-short strategy has two advantages. Number one, it does not distract long-only portfolio manager with short positions. Most long-only portfolio managers don't have experience with short positions, so it doesn't distract them. They just continue to do what they're used to doing. And two, this can easily be implemented on top of any long-only portfolio with any style bias. In our case, we used Perpetual's Australian share fund that has the value and the quality bias and a track record of more than 20 years. So the long portfolio we picked was Perpetual's Australian share fund. The strategy was 120% of ASF and the 20% short positions. Short positions were created on a monthly basis using implied alphas from ASF, and portfolios were rebalanced once a month. Now I want to show you the backtest results. The backtest results are from August 1997 to August 2002. Two things I'd like to point out on these results. Number one, there was an almost 52% improvement in the portfolio efficiency, and hence the alpha. And the absolute risk, i.e. the risk of losing money, was same for both long-only and long-short portfolio. Now, based on this back test, we actually launched the SharePlus fund, and it's now been running for more than 5 years. Some of the implementation considerations, that things that you need to be aware of. The first one is the risk. The risk in the short positions are skewed or lopsided. If you buy a stock for $1, then all you can lose is that $1 that you put into the stock. However, if you short a stock at $1 and the stock goes to $8, then you lose $7. Some past examples of such lopsided risk scenarios would be stocks like Fortescue, RPL, CSL, etc. Your losses can be open-ended with short positions. Now, this risk can be managed by, number one, diversifying the short portfolio, and number two, having stringent risk controls on short positions through stop-loss mechanism, both at the stock level and the portfolio level. The second thing that you need to be aware of is the stock availability. Most, if not all, short positions are currently implemented, most, if not all, short positions are currently implemented through borrowing stock from a prime broker. Sometimes the stock that you want to short may not be available, or the stock that you are short may be recalled. This risk can be mitigated by having a relationship with more than one prime broker. And finally, you need to be aware of the franking credits. If you borrow the stock from a domestic investor, a domestic lender, and you short the stock through the dividend period, you will need to gross up the dividend amount through the franking credits. So you try and borrow as much stock as you can from overseas lenders. So just to finish off, not running a portfolio at its maximum efficiency is like driving a 6-speed car in second gear. Short positions are more risky than long, but the risks can be managed through diversification and stop-loss mechanism. And finally, even a modest amount of short selling, even 5% amount of short selling, can have a dramatic impact on portfolio efficiency and hence the alpha. And this is the reason why we say the long short, even if it's got 5% short, going forward is going to be the new long. Thank you very much. I think it's just a question of practice. Like at Perpetual, when we first started this, long-only portfolio managers didn't pay a lot of attention to the short positions. And now they're starting to look at it because the performance is there and they're sort of wondering what is driving the performance. So it's a learning process. So. But this is the whole idea. Like, we don't want to distract them from their long positions. If they're interested, that's fine. Motivate them to come up with, good short ideas and the best shorting ideas. We, like, we all sort of sit within 10 meters of each other. So, like, I constantly get feedback, why aren't you short this or why you short this, sort of things. And I don't know. I mean, I think it'd just be a question of just running with this. It's only the last couple of years their ears have perked up and said this is
Okay, we'll fire into open. If I get you to talk into this, because we'll record the question that way.
I just got a question. Why wouldn't I go to this one then as a core Aussie equity exposure for Perpetual as opposed to the ASF or the Industrial Share Fund if for the same risk I'm getting a better return?
question.
The capacity, the people are very comfortable with positive numbers, and they're not so comfortable with negative numbers. This is in the process of evolution. This, like I said, most of the short positions are created through borrowing stocks, and I think that's a very inefficient mechanism. And as the market develops, it'll become more efficient. At this stage, capacity is limited, so you can't put all your thing in this sort of product. But as the thing becomes more popular, you should be able to buy a stock and sell a stock just as easily. You know, like.
So this is more evolutionary and increases risk.
Yeah, it's like my ex-boss at Bankers Trust. He spent a lot of time. He said, why can I go to the window and say number two to win in third race? Why can't I go and say number two to lose in third race? And now actually you can do that. He says it's starting to evolve. It's the same thing, long short, you know, sort of.
The reason that we're here at the Port Pilot Construction Conference is we are selectively targeting advisors, sort of like in that boutique channel, who do sort of look outside of the square. And this is not a fund that we are targeting sort of a mass market due to that sort of limited capacity. So our argument would be that, yes, you can have this as a core in your portfolios, but again, the reason we're here is because we believe that this group can understand this and actually have this as a core holding in their Aussie equity holdings.
So you'd recommend people switching out the other fund?
Bazant, your Share Plus fund, is it a 120-20 fund?
Yes.
And is it a fixed 20% short all the time, or do you have the capability to be not short at all? If you feel like it, or what sort of variability do you have?
I have the flexibility to be, I think it's between 15 and 25%. My range is 15 to 25%.
The income you get from shorting, do you then turn that round and invest it into your best long? So it's an enhanced fund?
No, invest in the same Austin Share Fund.
Yeah, so it's an enhanced fund.
It's Austin Share Fund. So if you give me $100, yep. I'll do $120 worth of Austin Share Fund, and that extra $20, I will fund it through short positions.
Right.
Okay, someone else in the room. If you don't mind, I'll work backwards. That sort of.
Can you just go through the actual process of the short decision-making, if you like? Is it based around the same as the long decision making, but the opposite, or is it more technical in your analysis?
The main tool that I use to manage short positions is basically a spreadsheet that brings all the information together. It brings together for me the implied alpha of the stock, it brings together for me the analyst ranking on the stock, and it tells me how much I can sell. We got liquidity constraints, so whatever short positions you have to be able to get out in 5 days. So we have all these constraints, and then these days technology is so good, like every day I'll look at the stock, and if it's moved against me, I'll actually go and talk to the analyst and see if there's anything that's happened in the stock to change his view. So I get the analyst ranking, I get the implied alpha, I get the liquidity, they're all in one place, and I use that to manage the short positions.
My question's an extension on the last one. If you have a different philosophy on how you earn that money on the short side to the long side of the team, how do you combine that philosophy for one fund in understanding your delivery of what you're trying to achieve and so you're not, you know, operating basically two funds in one?
The philosophy is the same. Is the consideration. The thing that I use, that the long side won't use, is the sentiment. Like, for example, JB Hi-Fi was expensive stock, but it was such a sentiment behind it, I can't afford to be short. They can afford to be out of it, I can't afford to be short. So I'll wait till the sentiment subsides and the stock is still expensive, then I'll short it. And I've been short JB Hi-Fi now for, I don't know, three to 6 months. So the sentiment overlay on the value philosophy of Perpetual. You can't afford to short stocks. There are Fortescue and IPL, you know, doesn't matter how expensive they are.
The other point to add to that, Dan, is that we're not short stocks that we have long. Make sense? So short stocks that we don't hold, and there's very
Good, good point. Yeah.
In seeking greater portfolio efficiency and relaxing some of your constraints, are you almost sometimes running the risk of getting both sides of the ledger wrong? So in high volatile markets like earlier this year, long-short strategies were actually underperforming even more significantly than long-only managers?
I think it comes down to the question of skill. Like if you look at the equation, there are four terms on the right-hand side, and skill is one of them. If your portfolio manager does not have skill, if you've got a negative skill, you do not want to be efficient. So I will argue that in volatile markets, your IC is actually dropped. It's not the efficiency that's killing you, it's the IC that's killing you. If IC goes negative and you're efficient, you got a problem.
Sorry, Vasant, in the Fin Review today, there was an article pretty much bagging lending stocks or borrowing stocks. Have you got any comments on that?
You want to go with it? Yeah, we sort of, it's been raised several times, and it was quite interesting to see Senator Nick's views on this subject. And he sort of basically endorsed that short selling strategies are valid investment strategies. And also that article was referring mostly to stocks outside ASX 200, and we don't sell any stocks outside ASX 200 because of liquidity problems. And I think the Opus thing is a different story. It's not a bona fide stock lending thing. So,
given that the profit that you make from shorting would be made within a 12-month period, therefore it'd have to be distributed income, would a fund like this have a higher income distribution in the total return versus a long-only fund?
Under normal circumstances, yes.
You want to extend on that, or is... Yes.
No, because you're right. I mean, all the short positions, by definition, are ordinary income, so you have to distribute those.
Just given the charts you showed at the start, do you think that the 5 years returns that you've shown is long enough a period to sort of validate what you're actually saying?
So the first two charts, the
just the differences in the type of markets, like in looking at the US over 60 years, do you think that the 5 year returns and the outperformance that you've shown there is enough to validate the theory of what you're saying?
The question is, you took 5 years, and a peculiar 5 years as well. The question is why? Why, and is it long enough?
We showed you the 5 years of backtesting, and Paul's going to show you 5 years of live performance in a minute. And so sort of the strategy's been in place for 5 years, and it sort of basically validates what we concluded from the study. So you're going to talk about that. Based on the implied alpha. Yeah, so each month we have the Australian share fund. We take the long portfolio, we run it through a risk model, and that spits out the implied alphas. And then we used, like Paul said, I cannot short stocks that are long ASF. So you got the alphas, you got the optimizer, and then you create a short portfolio.
So when you apply attribution analysis right up to date, guys, because you must follow this on a weekly basis, and you've had tumultuous markets, you've had shorting of stock and erratic behavior. How's it performing relative to expectations if you go right up to date?
All the attributions will obviously get magnified. For example, like property trust and infrastructure, long guys were not, we haven't had for a while, and this is actually short. Property trust and infrastructures, some of these investment banks like BNB, etc. So the same attributes get magnified. I think it's the question about if you believe the manager has skill, whether the market is sideways or up or down, doesn't matter. The reason we talked about the bull market is because this is built on top of Australian Share Fund, which is basically value and quality bias. And that fund does not do well in the bull market. So the IC is not as much as you would like it to be. And like I said, if your IC is not there, running it more efficiently is not going to do anything for you. So because this portfolio is based on a quality bias portfolio, it doesn't tend to do well in a bull market. But otherwise, if you've got the IC, this will make it more efficient. Not really. I mean, even the quant people have risk controls that are outside the quant quant process. Like, for example, Centro Property Trust, a lot of the especially that stock, momentum went from like that, and a lot of the quant people caught long that stock. And I don't know any quant person who actually didn't get out. There was no quant signal that told you to get out. And the quant, there's no risk controls in quant as per se. If you wait for your signals to turn, the company is bankrupt by that time. So all the quant processes also have risk management that's outside their quant process. Because this is something you cannot forecast, you just have to deal with it when it happens. The number of examples, you know, like Centro stands out because it was absolutely going gangbusters and suddenly collapsed.
Here's a tricky question. If you've got a really good fund and it's working well, why put any performance fee on? Because if you're outperforming everyone, money will flow in and you'll get more money anyway. Thought?
We're happy to raise the price. 99 is our standard flat wholesale pricing. So if you look at our industrial share fund, our flagship fund's at 99. Australian share fund's at 99.
That's that margin this response
adding,
again, isn't it?
This is adding extra efficiency, and we feel that we're backing the shorting.
And healthily, I'm sure. Somebody over there, question?
For the back testing, we assumed a flat transaction cost, but the live performance is also sort of is consistent with what we were expecting. So even the transaction costs are mostly manageable. The markets are quite efficient these days, especially if you're not going outside ASX 200.
Paul, perhaps a question, if I could ask of you. The difficulty when you take a portfolio, and I think planners are always looking for true-to-label outcomes and true-to-label managers, so they get reliability when an appointment is made. And then when you add in a quant-based activity, such as shorting, you do go into the black box scenario of trusting us. And when performance falters, everybody questions whether or not it was, in fact, the shorting or whether it was some other issue. How do you handle that very delicate issue of establishing a long-term track record for reliability and then introducing quite a volatile cocktail which takes away transparency?
Can I deal with that? Sure. Okay, first of all...
That was quite a loaded question, wasn't it?
It's not a quant strategy.
You get a wrong reply.
We use the quant process to demonstrate the concept. But this portfolio from day one has been run as a discretionary portfolio. The long side is run totally independent of the short side. So they're two separate portfolios. There's no...
So the audience can actually analyze themselves the
performance
differentiation, yep. Which is a good response, and decide whether they want to carry on with that or not. Do you think fund managers should do that, or do you think the planning community should think about using ETFs to reweight portfolios instantaneously and take positions quickly?
That's the market timing, isn't it? That's a bit tricky. I don't know. That, like, you know, top at the end, the market breadth is one.
Yeah, it's a big call. But equally, when you short, you must take a position on the market, market time to take a short. So.
Not really. Like we short between 40 and 60 stocks.
Yeah.
So. That 25% is market movement. I can't initiate 25% shorts. Okay.
Up to 20% shorts, market movement 25.
Yep. Great. Okay, any final questions? Any thought-provoking issues popping up from that? There's some well-known identities in this room with usual questions. Patrick, you haven't said anything yet, and you're a researcher. I can't believe it. Okay, I'll pass over, therefore, to Paul to wrap up on this particular point, and then we'll go into the session feedback point, if we can.
In the mic.
Okay, so Perpetual Share Plus Fund, it's a long short strategy. It offers you an enhanced version of our renowned Australian Share Fund. It gives you the opportunity to add more value to your portfolio through a fund that can take short positions in shares within a risk control environment. We've taken Perpetual's Australian Share Fund, which offers investors a consistent, a disciplined, and a long-term approach to investing in quality Australian companies at a good price. The fund is brought to you by one of Australia's largest and most stable teams and of highly experienced investment specialists who have proven performance over many cycles. For example, the Australian Share Fund has outperformed the market by 3.3% per annum over the last 10 years. Our flagship fund, the Industrial Share Fund, has outperformed the market by 2.74% per annum over the last 25 years, and this is after fees. And so this is a long history providing strong alpha to your clients. The Share Plus long position is identical to the Australian Share Fund, and we have the opportunity to leverage the skill of our managers by shorting stocks that we don't like up to 20%, and then taking that cash from the shorts and enhancing the returns in our longs. We mitigate the shorts by holding between 40 to 60 stocks, shorts, and we take a large number. So we're taking a large number of small positions, and the maximum threshold, as you said before, was 25. So how's our performance? Just want to focus on the bottom two lines. Firstly, a period of strong excess performance, the 12 months of June 08, and then a period of negative excess performance, the 12 months of June 07. So as you'd expect in the current market conditions, Perpetual should have some strong excess performance compared to the market. The Share Plus has had excess performance of 8.78% for the 12 months of June 08. And that recent strong performance due to two main factors. Firstly, strong excess returns in the Australian Share Fund. The fund's conservative approach has been better rewarded in an environment where investors have been increasingly risk adverse. And secondly, strong excess performance in the short side of the portfolio. Fasant has added considerable value by shorting many of those stocks which have had their business models tested, as well as those companies with high debt levels and high valuations. And as we all know, there's numerous examples like Centro Properties, Alco, MFS, ABC and Babcock. In the period up to June 2007, we witnessed a broad-based bull run across all sectors. And in June last year, we produced a paper with our thoughts on the markets. And in summary, we sort of stated that firstly, we felt valuations were high. Secondly, speculative fervour was everywhere and corporate activity was rife. And thirdly, market sentiment was rosy. And these conditions provided significant headwinds for Perpetual's equity funds, with the market not rewarding companies on the basis of their strong fundamentals. On top of that, the opportunity to add value through shorting were diminished, as less than 10% of the stocks in the ASX 300 posted a negative return. So those of you that are familiar with our philosophy know that we tend to struggle relative to the market in the later stages of a bull market. But at excess performance, once the market normalises and stock picking is rewarded. So this is not a hedge fund, it's a core equity product. It leverages off our stock picking skills. Risks are similar to a traditional equity product, and the market sentiment and dynamics have changed dramatically, and investors need to reassess how to maximise their returns or alpha by improving the efficiencies of their portfolios in a lower return environment. So today, I ask that you look to include Perpetual's Share Plus Fund in your client's portfolio as a core Australian equity fund. And Vasant and I and Perpetual's account executives will provide any assistance to help in this outcome. Thank you.
Okay. I'm telling you what Caitlin's thinking is, do I give the 5-star rating to this fund or the other fund? She's thinking. She's going to have a right reply in a minute. Okay, we're going to go question time. Thank you. If you can get your SIM cards, put them into the gizmos. The speakers never want to be here if number one is pressed, I can assure you. So, okay, from your perspective and what you're expecting from the day, was this session, I can't even bring myself to say it, awful, mediocre, good, or in fact excellent? 1, 2, 3, 4, if you'd press now. 3, 2, 1, if you're still thinking, thank you. Okay, what we'll do is have a response now, sort of a summary of this, and a whole range of things go through my minds, guys, because I think what you're doing is a great thing and you're enhancing, but I'm thinking about my mother who's going to be an investor, and I'm thinking, should I put her in the fund for people that aren't so bright, or should I put her in the fund for bright people because she's going to get a better rate of return? And I don't know the answer to that, so I'll turn to a researcher and say, which fund, and here's a good researcher.
Shorting 5%, you get a lot more efficiency. When you move down to 20, you're getting less. It's not linear. You're getting less efficiency. So the more you're shorting, the less efficiency you're getting. So Vasant's conclusion for this in the retail market is that 20% is sufficient shorting to get that efficiency. He doesn't need to go any further than that. So mitigating the risk.
And also just, yeah, following that, probably also depends on your risk tolerance to a degree, because there's a bit of leverage in borrowing the, you know, to getting the initial 50% and then shorting that. So I guess it depends on your client's risk tolerance and the tracking error. They're probably a higher tracking error product that is, you know, taking that sort of more highly, I guess, 130, 140, 40, et cetera. But I guess Van Eyck recently released their long-short review, which we call the extension review. We do see a role for these sorts of products in your clients' portfolios, again, provided they're aware of, I guess, how the products are put together and some of the risks associated with that. And I think Vasant highlighted probably one of the key things for us, again, is skill. Because if you don't have skill in identifying long ideas and also good shorting ideas, then that's when, obviously, the risks can be exacerbated. So in our review, I guess that traditionally we've been seeing a lot more of the quantitative funds, because quant processes tend to lend themselves a little bit naturally to those long and shorting ideas. But we're starting to see, I think, the fundamental houses starting to develop a lot more, and we'll see a lot more movement in these products. So certainly within a portfolio, we've been recommending perhaps one, if your clients are happy with that extension, that one of your managers, out of 3 or 4 managers, could be at one of these extension products, which is around 5% of your portfolio, Australian equities portfolio.
Could I ask why you wouldn't
use long
short?
For all of it?
Why not?
For the efficiency, I guess you've got to be comfortable with that higher exposure and that leverage. So it's, you know, in that sort of ideas, it's just, I guess from us, we would prefer that you've still got some of those core long-only exposures and just have that additional part of your portfolio.
But if you're getting the same outcome, I still you're getting the same risk-return characteristics. I'm from BlackRock, by the way, so that's why I might skip this.
Stage is probably a bit more of the comfortability with that. So yes, it, you know, you can see the efficiency of ideas,
yeah.
But I guess in terms of our perspective at the moment, having the skills and to be able to both identify good shorting things, there's obviously other things in the portfolio's capacity, being able to get access to stock, and I mean there are other things that we would have to consider. Can the managers get access to those stocks to short and things like that? And so combining this, we, I guess at the moment we see it as being just a portion of your Aussie equity portfolio, given that some of those constraints being allocated to extension type strategies.
Great. Thanks, Caitlin. Well, if I don't get you out of here, we don't eat and I get sacked. So on behalf of everybody, thank you, guys. I think it's a first-class firm and a great presentation.
Thanks. Thank you.
Please leave your gizmos behind as well, if you would.